Welcome to Coffeehouse Shots for Spectators Daily Politics Podcast. Is Boris Johnson's deal finally dead? There's been lots of pretty negative sounds coming out from Europe over the weekend, and the chances of it being passed by next week's EU summit seem to be virtually nil. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bowles to discuss. So James, talk us through the negative sounds we've been hearing.
The negative sounds are the European Union say that this deal would still require checks on the island of Ireland, and that is unacceptable to them, and so it fails one of their tests. They also object to the fact that they say that they don't like the idea that this whole arrangement is dependent on Stormont, because they say they don't want to be dependent on a kind of regional assembly that has been in abeyance for the last few years. So, I mean, I think it is not looking hopeful for the deal. I think one of the reasons, there are two main reasons why it's not looking hopeful for the deal. One of them is that the UK has undoubtedly gone back on commitments it made in the joint report under Theresa May and in the withdrawal agreement. And the problem is, because Theresa May gave away so much in those agreements, that anything that isn't that seems to the EU and Dublin to be reneging or to be unreasonable. I think the idea that the UK should be able to leave the European Union with its customs territory intact is a kind of thoroughly reasonable proposition, but it feels unreasonable.
But we always knew that the backstop was going. That was the whole point of Boris Johnson becoming Prime Minister. So surely, if they're saying we're not going to accept anything that doesn't have Theresa May's backstop, that means there's almost no point in discussing anything.
Certainly at the moment, because of the Benn Act, because the EU know it's not choosing between this deal and no deal, it's choosing between this deal and an extension. And if you consider that the EU is essentially following the Irish lead at the moment on this question, because it's Ireland's interests that are most affected by this element of the withdrawal agreement. And Leo Varadkar, I think, slightly gave a game away the other day when he said, you know, look, if there was another second referendum in Britain, all the polls suggest that the Brits would vote to stay in. So from an Irish point of view, why not take the risk and see what a second election throws up? And if it throws up something that leads to a second referendum or leads to a softer Brexit, then all to the good. I think the danger is the assumption that this deal is still on offer after a second election if the Tories win a majority. I think there is a chance that the election could create such a momentum behind the idea of not compromising, of leaving, you know, the day before yesterday, that that becomes very difficult to arrest. I also think it is worth noting a very interesting story in the Irish Times by Dennis Staunton on Saturday, that the EU is prepared to accept, in theory, although probably not now, but in theory, two customs territories on the island of Ireland. That does suggest that if Boris Johnson can win a majority, there could be a deal.
Right, but Katie, he can win a majority and it still doesn't look like there's going to be a deal. I guess the EU is playing for time. Now, I guess people like me, who actually would quite like a deal, wonder why on earth you would extend this ridiculous game a day longer than you need to. And Boris Johnson's trying to say to them, don't make a historic misjudgment about where Britain is. But it doesn't look as if he's making any headway.
No, and you saw over the weekend, ultimately on the domestic front, you've seen several government ministers, including Boris Johnson, using various op-eds to hammer this point home and to try and make this message to both opposition MPs, who they need to vote for a potential deal, and Brussels, who they need to grant a potential deal, saying, if you don't go for this, really, we could be heading to no deal. Now, I don't think many people believe no deal is happening on the 31st of October. But I think there is a sense that even though Boris Johnson has to keep talking about the 31st of October, the point being, as James touched on, that when this comes back around, if there is a Conservative government with a majority, this might be a harder sell. I think that if you look at the various factors in terms of domestic pressures, because you do have the Hillary Benn legislation, which means that an extension is quite likely, I think that Brussels feel that they are able to say, we don't like these parts, we don't feel that there is this much pressure. I think Ireland has to make a political calculation in terms of their domestic pressure, and I don't think Leo Varadkar is at all open to this idea of two customs territories, of two borders. And I think that if you look at where Ireland is, it's very hard to see them moving in the time. You have Emmanuel Macron saying that they will indicate by the end of the week whether a Brexit deal is possible. But all the mood music so far is that it's going to be a no, because if you look at Michel Barnier and comments he made on Friday, there is this idea that, reiterating again the fact that in a way these talks are a bit more about a blame game. Everyone is trying to show that they're acting in, you know, good faith, that they're trying to do what they can. And Michel Barnier was saying that if we do end up with no deal, that is on Boris Johnson, not us. And then you also had Dominic Cummings, I understand, on Friday night in his meeting to government advisers, saying that if there wasn't movement on the EU side, then the UK would have to be ready to go for no deal because they cannot move that much more. So I don't think that they're... When you have people like Barnier saying the UK needs to come up with different proposals, they want to get breakthrough by the end of the week, how much can Number 10 move? I think on certain issues, perhaps how a Stormont lock would work, you know, the length of time, all these things, there is movement. On the idea of the UK having its own customs territory, that is a non-starter for Boris Johnson to move. So I think the gulf between the two sides is too wide to really see any movement or the chance of a deal by the end of the week.
Now, James, imagine Michel Barnier is listening to this podcast. Of course, I've got no doubt that he does. What is it that you think the EU side isn't getting? We know what the EU thinks. We had the great honour of having Pat Leahy on a podcast here on Saturday, the political editor of the Irish Times. He was saying Dublin thinks, look, let's have a general election. It can't get any worse. What is the scenario whereby no deal happens because in rejecting this deal, the EU sets off a train of events which it doesn't seem currently able to envisage?
I don't think the EU are necessarily miscalculating at the moment, simply because they are right about what the Benn Act means. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing that they are probably underpricing at the moment is this. Let us imagine that you have a general election campaign. Let's imagine that Boris Johnson moves to quite a very tough-sounding position to try and secure the support of more Brexit Party voters. He then wins a majority.
And by the way, that tough-sounding position would be what?
Oh, you know, it's my deal, which must be taken in the exact state that it is, or no deal.
By the way, my deal would have to be taken within a very short period of time. He'd have to set a new deadline.
Kind of 72 hours to agree to my deal, kind of thing. And the danger that would then happen is that would create such momentum that even if the EU basically said, yeah, we can live with this, but we want this or that change to the Stormont lock, it would become very hard to do because there would be such a momentum behind the idea of leaving the day before yesterday that it would be very hard. I mean, that is the thing that the EU is underestimating.
So in order to win over the Brexit Party voters, then he would have to give a series of relatively hard iron, cast iron promises, not because he wants to, but simply because he would not be able to win his majority unless he were saying, I don't know, you give the example of, I want the deal within 72 hours, otherwise it's no deal. But it would be something off that order. And then, let's say he gets the majority in Parliament, for the first time there would be a majority for no deal in a way that there's now not.
Yes, and I mean, one of the reasons why those 21 Tory MPs lost the whip was to try and ensure that even if the Tories win a very small majority, there is a majority for no deal in Parliament. I think one of the other things that the people are perhaps underestimating is, at the moment, Boris Johnson has managed to get Steve Baker, Marc Francois, all these people to be happy with these compromises by saying, look, this is the only way you can get out on October the 31st. Once that deadline has passed and there is a new Parliament, people will begin to say, oh, look, we can do no deal now, I've got momentum. And also, yes, no deal will be disruptive, but we've got 5 years to deal with the disruption before we have to face the electorate again. That, I think, is the kind of underestimated factor.
Now, Katie, there was an opinion poll from Opinium recently where it put to voters the three options taken by the three parties right now. The first was the Tory option, Brexit deal or no deal by October the 31st. But then you've got the second referendum, a new deal and second referendum, that's Labour's option. Then you've got, let's cancel Brexit, that's the Lib Dem option. Of these three options, the no deal option was the most popular at 40%. Next came no Brexit at 26%, then came Labour's option, second referendum, at 18%. So can you see a general election leading in a hardening of public opinion towards Brexit? I imagine that the Irish might be gambling, I don't know, on the second referendum option prevailing if Jeremy Corbyn wins. Maybe some of them even think that Brexit might be cancelled completely. We know Leo Varadkar was telling us on Friday that the Brits actually want to find a way out of Brexit, but they haven't been given the mechanism. So do you think that we might end up being tipped into this gamble because so many in Europe just cannot believe that no deal is going to get a public endorsement.
I think there's potential for it. I mean, part of the reason I think Brussels are reluctant is if you did have, say, a Labour minority government, I think very few think Labour en route to majority. They're very few thought they would do well in the 2017 snap election. And you had the second referendum on a Brexit deal and on Remain. There's a sense that if Jeremy Corbyn to really renegotiate it, it would probably be a permanent customs union. So it's much easier for Brussels. So I think that's one of the things. But if Boris Johnson were to win a majority and you've had an election which would have a heavy focus on Brexit and trying to win over Brexit Party voters, I think people would grow continually impatient with Brussels. I think that Brussels would be depicted as unreasonable. I think you can see in everything Boris Johnson has done since revealing his proposed deal last week, trying to strike this emollient tone, trying to come across as reasonable. It's clearly in a general election campaign, he would say, I've done everything I possibly can. Look at this other side. All we wanted to do was to have a single customs territory. Perhaps you find a snappier way to say that on a leaflet. and they've still rejected it. But I do still think that were Boris Johnson to win a majority, I think that he would be on such a high from that if he predominantly still wanted a Brexit deal, if that was what he wanted to do, he would be able to bring probably the bulk of his MPs with him, because I think that you would have the fact that he had won that majority and it would be good for him. But I do think it would be hard for him to sell too many concessions, and ultimately he will have talked himself into no deal through the course of that campaign, just because he has to. You can't go into a general election campaign having had your deal rejected by Brussels acting as though it's one in a million chance of no deal, something he said during the leadership race. I don't think he'd be able to say that again. I don't think he'd say it right now. I don't think he'd be able to say it during a general election with a straight face. It's probably more like 50-50. So therefore I think that they're going to have to work out something which you haven't heard that much of, how they're going to sell no deal but keep an option of a deal on the table. I still personally think Boris Johnson will want to get a deal, but I think the space for him to do it will get narrower.
I mean, James, for those who would like a deal, I would very much like a deal. I imagine you would too. But basically, this seems to be a flop. I mean, Boris has said, okay, you can take Northern Ireland into the EU regulatory zone, pretty big concession. Okay, we can have a UK-Northern Ireland border, something we thought the DUP would never sign up to. They've signed up to it now. Something that we thought that the Tory Spartans, the ERG, would never sign up to, they've signed up to it. So the stars have aligned for this. But this deal looks like it's going to die in its feet. And if you believe, as you and I do, I think, that the chances of reviving it in the same way afterwards are pretty slim, then things are taking a bit of a turn for the worst. This is a chance at an elegant solution, and it seems as if it's going to be discarded because the EU seem to not believe it's anything other than a cynical tactic.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, if you go back to straight after the referendum, if the UK had proposed then what it is proposing now, that Northern Ireland would essentially stay in the European Economic Area, but stay in the UK's customs territory, I suspect that could have been the basis for a negotiation or an agreement. The problem is what has happened since. The things that the UK government signed up to under Theresa May, which were undeliverable in the UK political system, and the EU are like, well, why are you reneging on that? Which is not an unreasonable question. That is problem one. And then problem two is, as Katie was saying, you know, they are very tempted to take their chances and see what happens after an election. And you can see why, because a Brexit where the whole of the UK stayed in the customs union would be preferable to the EU. It would help the EU assert itself on the world stage when it comes to striking trade deals and all those sorts of things. But I think the kind of question is on what happens after an election. I think Katie is right. Boris Johnson will undoubtedly have one more heave at trying to get a deal. The question becomes, how much wiggle room has he left himself? Has he talked himself into a position where only the EU basically agreeing to his deal in record time would work? Or will he have left himself enough time to have a genuine negotiation or not? I mean, that is the question. I also think that the EU's position here, you know, this, as you said, I mean, this is not nothing, this UK offer. And I think the point about the backstop, which is underappreciated, is the backstop was unsustainable in the long term. 80% of unionists in Northern Ireland don't like it. And it is very hard to see how something could be sustainable in Northern Irish politics when 80% of the majority community don't like the idea of it. That, I think, is the thing that is being missed on the EU side. I don't think the backstop is built to last. I think if you could do this, you would come up with a solution for an all-Ireland regulatory zone that has unionist buy-in.
Right. Now, Katie, you might say that it ain't over till it's over, but I imagine it will be over pretty soon. The EU are going to have their summit at the end of next week. Then we are into this letter-writing territory, where Parliament has passed a law saying Boris Johnson should be writing a letter asking for an extension. He has said repeatedly, not only during the Tory conference at the beginning of last week, but in a tweet at the end of last week, that he's not going to do it. It's Brexit on October 31st or it's no deal. We hear over the weekend that his Attorney General, Geoffrey Cox, has said that he would resign if the Prime Minister doesn't go along with the Benn Act. Do we think that's correct?
I think it is correct that if Boris Johnson appeared to be breaking the law, so in breach of the Benn Act, you would have several cabinet resignations.
But presumably he would say he's not breaking the law. He came up with some weird interpretation that might be, you know. So his conceit would be, oh, Geoffrey, don't resign. I'm not actually breaking the law because Dominic Cummings has found this little subclause that we're going to try in the courts.
Because Geoffrey Cox is the Attorney General, he would have to sign. He would have to give the advice that is legal. That is the point of Cox's position. What Cox matters so much because he has to be the person who says, yes, we can do this, it's legal. And at which point that gives cover to everyone else in the cabinet who might feel, you know, to say, oh, this is fine. The Attorney General thinks this is a lawful act, what we're doing, so we can do it.
So, Katie, Geoffrey Cox resigning would not be a good look.
No, but I also think Robert Buckland, along with a host of other members of this cabinet, if they actually thought Boris Johnson was in breach of the law, would resign. I think the question is, there is a sense in government and also in some corners of Number 10 that we are heading to an extension. It's just who has to request it and how dramatic is the showdown to get there. Now, if you're going to have to request an extension, I think that there are figures close to Boris Johnson who would like it to be as dramatic a showdown as possible to show that Boris Johnson is fighting it on all these levels.
So we get Lady Hale back with her spider brooch.
Exactly. So can you get a ruse that takes the Number 10 to court and a court showdown about it, or does it stop before you get there? I think that if Boris Johnson can say this, you know, this is a grey area in terms of whether I can avoid writing a letter by using this thing we've come up with, would someone like Geoffrey Cox be able to go along with that for the time being to go to a court? I think that is a question. But I think if then the court found against Boris Johnson and he still tried not to do it, that's the point where I think you would actually have quite a few resignations from this cabinet. And not just those, I think, who are from the legal profession. I think there are other cabinet ministers who would be very uneasy. And you saw it a month or so ago, but I think it was the first reports on this Brexit Groundhog Day on ways to get around the bill. There were first reports about how Boris Johnson could just ignore the law. And Robert Buckland, Justice Secretary, took to social media and actually said, I've had a discussion with Boris Johnson and it's fine, guys, because he has clarified to me that he will respect the rule of law. So I think you'll start to see that domino effect of more if after, I think, a court case made explicitly clear he had to do it, he didn't either resign or request an extension.
I think if you offered Number 10 the chance of this Scottish court turning around and saying, we're going to take on the legal personality of the Prime Minister and send the letter ourselves, I think Number 10 would regard that as a rather good way out of this. They just don't want Boris Johnson's signature on the letter. And if they can find some, you know, they obviously would like to leave on the 31st of October, but they know that's not going to happen. If they can find some way for him to avoid the blame for it, that serves their political purpose.
And James, on my way to the office today, I passed a number of bodies lying down on the pavement in Parliament Square. It looked for a minute like it was MPs finally defeated by the sheer fatigue of discussing Brexit for so long, but turns out it was Extinction Rebellion protesters. So, Katie, apparently this is going to last for 2 whole weeks. Do you think it will?
There's 2 weeks of demonstrations around the Westminster area, what they're planning. On the way here, I saw a singing group of protesters, so I'm not sure how aggressive they will be. They were quite happy and relaxed, to be honest. But ultimately, they're trying to push their environmental agenda, and the thing they really want is a commitment to be net carbon emissions by 2025. I think what I haven't seen any of the banners yet, but could be helpful, is what policies they're proposing to actually meet that target, because I keep hearing about citizens' assemblies, which tend to be what governments do, or perhaps campaign groups, and there are difficult decisions to be made, and they don't want to be blamed or get the heat for coming up with those.
James, what did you make of the protests? Did you manage to survive on your way through to the office?
I must admit, when I got out of the tube at Westminster Station this morning, I was rather underwhelmed. I mean, I was A, slightly disappointed that more roads weren't shut, because my commute from Westminster Studio to the Spectator can be very fast when you basically can walk across all the roads without any fear of cars. No, obviously I'm not in favour of shutting down roads. But
I think we need to up their game these Extinction Rebellion protesters. No. If you're listening, then James would like
but
more
it is,
roads closed.
There are not as many people. Certainly at 9:15 or so in the service morning, there were not as many people as there were last time. Do you remember when they were occupying Parliament Square? It didn't feel like that in terms of the numbers. But
maybe this 2 week thing, Katie, is just going to stretch it out to the point where they're not really getting across.
So James, I think you're talking, if I know your schedule correctly, about a pre 9 a.m. walk, which might bring out a different level of pace than say once we get to midday.
Yes, no, I definitely agree that because it's about. I accept that later by 3 o'clock this afternoon it might be a totally different story.
Okay, well the protesters must try harder. Thanks very much for listening. Thanks to James and Katie. Thanks to Cindy who produced the podcast. And you can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes Store or to the magazine itself by claiming our soon-to-expire ridiculously, ruinously cheap offer where you get a 20 quid voucher if you spend £12 on a trial Spectator subscription. It's spectator.co.uk/voucher.